Our speakers this morning are Tyler and Elizabeth Boggs. They are the co-owners of Heart to Heart Farms and founders of the Good Neighbor Family Pantry. We are blessed this morning to have these two amazing people with us. As you're going to learn, their mission is something that is, I still have trouble fully comprehending. We've had a chance to talk with them several times in the social justice community, an amazing story that you're about to hear. Elizabeth is going to begin with the selected reading, and then that will follow right into Tyler giving the talk this morning. So please welcome Elizabeth and Tyler Boggs.
Thank you. It is an honor to be here and get to share with you. Michael Pollan, he wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma. It's an amazing book if you haven't read it yet. It's a book I recommend as a nutritional therapy practitioner to my clients when they need to make dietary changes and they need a little bit extra motivation to get there so they can heal their body and gain back that vitality. So, as he writes, I never gave much thought to where my food came from. I didn't spend much time worrying about what I should and should not eat. Food came from the supermarket, and as long as it tasted good, I ate it. Until, that is, I had the chance to peer behind the curtain of the modern American food chain. This came in 1998. I was working on an article about genetically modified food, food created by changing plant DNA in the laboratory. My reporting took me to the Magic Valley in Idaho, where most of the French fries you've ever eaten begin their life as a Russian Burbank potato. There I visited a farm like no farm I've ever seen or imagined. It was 15,000 acres, divided into 135-acre crop circles. Each circle resembled the green face of a tremendous clock with a slowly rotating second hand. That sweeping second hand was the irrigation machine, a pipe more than 1,000 feet long that delivered a steady rain of water, fertilizer, and pesticide to the potato plants. The whole farm was managed from a bank of computer monitors in a control room. Sitting in that room, the farmer could, at the click of a switch, douse his crops with water or whatever chemical he thought they needed. One of these chemicals was a pesticide called Monitor, used to control bugs. The chemical is so toxic to the nervous system that no one is allowed in the field for 5 days after it is sprayed. Even if the irrigation machine breaks during that time, farmers won't send a worker out to fix it because the chemical is so dangerous. They'd rather let the whole 135 acres of potatoes dry up and die. That wasn't all. During the growing season, some pesticides get inside the potato plant so that they will kill any bug that takes a bite. But these pesticides mean people can't eat the potatoes while they're growing either. After the harvest, the potatoes are stored for 6 months in a gigantic shed. Here, the chemicals gradually fade until the potatoes are deemed safe to eat. Only then can they be turned into our French fries. That's how we grow potatoes? I had no idea. A few years later, while working on another story, I found myself driving down Interstate 5, the big highway that runs between San Francisco and Los Angeles. I was on my way to visit a farmer in the California Central Valley. It was one of those gorgeous autumn days when the hills of California are gold. Out of nowhere, a really nasty smell assaulted my nostrils, the stench of a gas station restroom sorely in need of attention. But I could see nothing that might explain the smell. All around me were the same blue skies and golden hills. And then, very suddenly, the golden hills turned jet black on both sides of the highway, black with tens of thousands of cattle crowded onto a carpet of manure that stretched as far as the eye could see. I was driving through a feedlot with tens of thousands of animals bellying up to a concrete trough that ran along the side of the highway for what seemed like miles. Behind them rose two vast pyramids, one yellow and the other black, a pile of corn and a pile of manure. The cattle, I realized, were spending their days transforming the stuff from one pile to the stuff of the other. This is where meat comes from? I had no idea. Suddenly, that happy meal of hamburger and fries looked a little less happy. Between the feedlot and the potato farm, I realized just how little I knew about the way our food is processed. The picture in my head of small family farms with white picket fences and red barns and happy animals on green pastures was seriously out of date. Now I had a big problem. I went from never thinking about where my food came from to thinking about it all the time. I started worrying about what I should and should not eat. Just because food was in the supermarket, did that mean it was good to eat? The more I studied and read about food, the more I realized I was suffering from a form of omnivore's dilemma. This is a big name for a very old problem. Human beings are omnivores. That means we eat plants, meat, mushrooms, just about anything. But because we are omnivores, we have very little built-in instinct that tells us which foods are good for us and which are not. That's the dilemma. We can eat anything, but how do we know what to eat? The omnivore's dilemma has been around a long time, but today we have a very modern form of looking at this dilemma. We have 1,000 choices of food in our supermarkets, but we don't really know where our food comes from. As I discovered, just finding out how our potatoes are grown might scare you off French fries for the rest of your life. In the past, people knew about food because they grew it or hunted it themselves. They learned about food from their parents and their grandparents. They cooked and ate the same foods people in their part of the world have always eaten. Modern Americans don't have a strong food tradition. Instead, we have dozens of different experts who tell us lots of different advice about what to eat and what not to eat. It's one thing to be crazy about food because you like to eat, but I found I was going crazy about worrying about food. So I set out to try to solve the modern omnivore's dilemma. I decided to become a food detective to find out where our food comes from and exactly what it is we're eating. This pretty much describes my husband and I to a T. We came across the food industry and the livestock feed industry, and that brought us to what Tyler's going to talk about. So on that note, I'm going to introduce my amazing other half. He is a committed father and teacher. He teaches ecopreneurship at Pacific University and spends his time farming with me and teaching people how to ethically raise their own livestock and provide for their communities and their families. He is a decorated veteran and a jack of all trades. And I introduce my wonderful husband, Tyler Boggs.
So now you guys know you need to sell your house, buy a farm, and raise all your own food. So what I want to talk to you about this morning is sustainability, because obviously we have the reality that all of us going from our current lifestyle to producing all our own food isn't, it's not in the cards for most of us with our current schedules. Can we all agree on that? But sourcing is more important than it's ever been. And so I have people all the time that ask me, what do you do? And so I'm going to try to summarize it. I'm going to take about 4 hours of information and cram it into about 20 minutes. So I'm going to speak quickly, and I want to let you know that if you're confused, you're normal. And I'm going to be downstairs afterward to answer any questions that you might have. So we'll try to de-perplex the perplexed. So we have the farm, which is called Heart to Heart Farms. And our primary mission is to help people get self-sufficient and sustainable. So we teach and educate and teach, you know, help people grow their own food. And that can be something as simple as tower gardens on a balcony in an apartment, or it can be literally moving onto 10 acres in the middle of nowhere with no electricity and doing rainwater collection and providing everything for your family. Does that make sense? So that's the mission of the organization. We sell livestock, we sell fruits and vegetables, we sell meat, but our focus, rather than selling a product, is to provide education and teaching. Now, we do sell products simply because that helps keep the machine running. But we also do petting zoos and birthday parties and field trips for kids and all sorts of other, because you've got to be diverse with the farming industry today. Does that make sense? It's really difficult to break even farming, much less if you're supporting a food pantry. So the second organization, and this is what I'm going to spend most of my time talking about today, is the Good Neighbor Family Pantry. And that's a 501c3 that was founded after we began the farm because we realized the need for good, clean food was higher than I had ever imagined. So this began because we were farming, and long story short, I had a buddy that was having local feed blended. It was all organic, and we were arguing about the differences between, you know, standard commercial feed and his locally blended organic feed. And we took his feed in, and he had it tested, and it was riddled with antibiotics. And this was all locally blended, locally grown organic feed. And the problem is that one gentleman doesn't grow all the seeds. So this guy buys from a guy who buys from a guy who ended up importing from China. And I'm not here to talk about, you know, all of the things that are wrong with this system. But the problem is what I realized when I went to the USDA website, and there's a 6-page list of non-organic toxins, synthetic ingredients that are allowable in certified organic livestock feed. A 6-page list in certified organic feed. That's not counting the other stuff. And so the wife and I mean, looked at each other and we said, enough is enough. And this all started, we've got lots of videos on our website, heartheartfarms.com. So if you go to the website and you want to get more background information, she did medevac for Afghanistan. My wife, I married so far above my station, it's ridiculous. She came back and started working in the emergency room. We just bought the farm. She came home one day and she just had a 9-year-old girl in the emergency room that was pregnant. And that was what began this frustration with this industry where we don't know what we're eating. And so we started picking up organic or fruits and vegetables to feed to our animals because I was sick and tired of these pellets that I didn't know what was in them. And so we'd pick up all this garbage from these stands and you know, grandma's produce and these other farms. And what we realized, like 70% of the stuff that was being thrown out was beautiful. And so we put a post out on social media. One week we had this really great food load. We put a post out and said, hey, we've got some extra this week. It's all garbage. But if anybody's hurting financially, you're welcome to come pick some up. We received 312 emails that night from families saying, mothers saying, we have not had produce in our home this year. From parents saying, the only meat my children have ever consumed is hot dogs and bologna. And by the third email, I'm weeping. And I go to my wife and I say, you know, look, babe, I know this wasn't the plan, but like, I think this is the plan. Like this feels way bigger than me and I don't know what to do. And my wife, she says, follow your heart, honey. You always do what's right anyway. And so we started the food pantry. And originally we didn't start a nonprofit. We just kind of opened it up. We called it Free Veggie Friday because Friday was our feed day. So we'd go pick up our feed, bring it back to the farm, and let the community show up, sort good from bad, and take whatever they wanted. And the first month, we probably had 50 people, but the second month, it was over 150. And it grew so incredibly quickly that the neighbors were upset, and they called the county. And they were wondering about parking, and there were all these issues, and the news came out and ran this scandalous article, Heart to Heart Farms, Are They Really Do-Gooders? Which was fantastic. Well, I mean, because I'd called the news companies and I said, look, we're starting this nonprofit. We're feeding people. And they're like, that's not news. And so, you know, of course, he's like, all right, you want on the news? We'll get you on the news. So they ran this primetime article for 3 weeks. Actually, it was really incredible. And from that, New Seasons, Whole Foods, Costco called us up and said, we want in. And it was fantastic. So, yeah, I mean, it was an incredible blessing. I couldn't have orchestrated it for sure. But so now, 3 years later, we ended up making it official and starting a 501c3. Now we pick up primarily from wholesalers. We distribute between 50 and 100,000 pounds of fresh produce a week to families in need. So, and I want to talk to your hearts real quickly because this hunger thing is a big deal. But there's no shortage of food. There's no food shortage. We pick up from a vendor. So we did a trial this year because we've been growing and growing and growing. And I wanted to see what the need was in the community. So this last summer, we made an announcement on social media and we let the community know. I said, we will pick up whatever you need. And that means that whenever the stock gets low, I'll send another truck into a wholesaler. We'll pick up more food and we'll bring it out. And I want to see what the community really needs. 7 days, 127,000 pounds of food. So first off, the need is way bigger than I ever realized. So I called the wholesaler and I said, hey, is this sustainable? Like we just did almost 130,000 pounds of food in 7 days. And he said, well, you picked up about 25% of what I had this week. Now, on one side, that makes me so excited because that's 500,000 pounds of food a week that I can pick up and feed families in need. And on the other side, it makes me, I'm so sad because all that food took thousands of dollars of energy, of labor, of petroleum, of gas. Because this isn't, mean, this isn't all local stuff. This is stuff that's being shipped all over the country. It's being boxed. It's being packaged. And then it's being thrown away. So those of you who had some snacks this morning, did anybody have some snacks this morning downstairs? Okay, so that's all garbage. Yeah, you were wondering what the catch was. Why is it free, right? But the quality, if you were down there, there's nothing wrong with any of that food. That was a tiny selection. We picked up 5,000 pounds the day before yesterday. One load, half a load, actually. It was tiny. Tiny load, 5,000 pounds. It's funny to be in that position when we used to pick it up in 55-gallon drums in a horse trailer. But the disconnect is what I really want to talk with you guys about, because most of us, I mean, this community, we really pride ourselves in creating change, in manifesting change, in making a difference. And I want to speak to your heart so you can see where I'm coming from and spend 30 minutes in my world where we've got an organization that pays almost $50,000 a year to throw away 500,000 pounds of food a week. And then they drive on their way to the dump. 4 miles down the road, they pass a school called Douglas Elementary that has 91% of their students below the poverty rate. 91% of their students qualify for free or reduced lunch, and they had to extend the summer lunch program, or extend the school lunch program all summer because the children wouldn't eat. So what kind of a world do we live in? And people say, oh my gosh, you're so unbelievable. I mean, Patrick, I really appreciate the introduction, but all I'm doing is sending my truck to a warehouse and bringing food to my farm and opening it up for people to eat. How disconnected are we where that is valiant? And we're all capable of so much. So this vendor is throwing all this food away. So we create a relationship. We pick it up. We bring it to the farm. And then we've got the community that volunteers, and they show up and they sort it. And this is really what makes us different from most other organizations. Because we have the farm there, we can handle large volumes of produce. So the problem is, Oregon Food Bank, they do an amazing thing. They've got many locations. I was on the phone with them last month just because I wanted to see how we were competing. And they do about 150,000 pounds of produce a month. And I asked them, I said, you know, and they feel pretty good about that amount. But we really should be doing per week almost what they're doing per month by the end of the year, which is super exciting to me, with one truck and 5 or 6 volunteers and a very, very, very low budget. But the reason they can't do that is what? Anybody know? Yeah, there we go. There we go. Because when you pick up 50,000 pounds of produce, number one, it's not all good. In fact, probably 30% of it's bad right off the top. And then if it doesn't get picked up right away, it starts turning quickly. So we're very, very blessed. So the wife has a farm, and the farm has lots of super hungry animals on it. And the pigs love watermelon. And they love peaches, and they love apples, and they love broccoli, and they love cauliflower, and the goats, and the cows, and the chickens, and the turkeys, and the ducks, and the geese, and the quail, and the pheasants, and the peacocks, and the rabbits, and everything. Rabbits love jalapenos. So we have this great spicy rabbit dish that is internally spicy. So the point is, there can be a system where not only are we feeding people, but we're eliminating waste. So this semi-truck, this 50-foot long vehicle, when they go to the dump, they take that truck and the arms grab it and they dump the whole thing and they put it back on the tractor and they drive away. We take that truck and we bring it back to the farm, we unload it, we sort good from bad. All the bad food goes to feed the animals or the worms. It all gets composted or fed, every single bit of it. The good food goes to people. If it turns, that goes back to the animals. And then that entire truck, everything that's recyclable gets recycled. That entire 50-foot truck that just was going to get dumped in the landfill is converted to 2 garbage cans on average. 2 garbage cans. So not only are we feeding thousands of people, but we're saving hundreds of thousands of cubic feet of waste from going into the landfill. We're recycling. I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of recycling that goes out. It's absolutely insane. But more than that, we're breaking a cycle of intergenerational poverty because there are no handouts. See, when you go to a food bank, there are two major issues. And I've been there. See, I had actually Costco was one of our vendors a while back, and then they called me up and they had originally seen the news article and called me and said, hey, we want to be a part of this. And then their management changed, and they called me up last year, I think it was, and they said, you know, I heard you were feeding this to people. I said, well, yeah, that's kind of the idea, you know. That's why you called me. And they said, well, we didn't call you. And I said, uh-oh, I know where this is going. And so they said, you know, I don't see how you can live with yourself. It's immoral to feed expired food to people. And I said, you poor, arrogant young man. Right? Because has anybody ever been in a position where it's hard to feed your family? I have been there. And there's nothing that's more humiliating. Nothing. I mean, I've been there where you don't have food. And when you go to the food bank, you get processed, packaged, shelf-stable garbage. And a lot of people don't do well because we don't feel well. And we don't feel well because we're taking in toxins and chemicals. And our body has to spend so much work digesting and getting rid of all of this stuff that we're taking in. So our whole focus is that there's no free lunch. There's nobody to sort this stuff for you. So the good news is we've got lots of food. The bad news is you got to show up. And it's hot. And it's a farm. So it's stinky. And there are flies. And you got to sort through some moldy stuff. And you got to help clean up some garbage. And the first time people come out, I want you guys to picture this for me. So the first time people come out, they're coming from a place of lack. And they're kind of sheltered and guarded. And they're looking around and they're used to being judged for where they're at. And they kind of take and they hide and they shuffle into their car. But this community is so unbelievably welcoming. It's all run by volunteers. It's all run by people that are in need. By the third time out, people are sharing recipes and hugging. And, hey, can I get some of that? And, hey, how do you cook that? And so I had a gal that came to me just a couple months back. And she's been coming for about 3 years since we first started. And she came to me and she was crying. And I said, you know, is everything okay? Can I give you a hug? What's going on? She said, I'm just so happy. And I said, well, that's great. Share it with me. And she said, well, my pantry's full. I've got preserves. I've got months of food. I said, well, that's fantastic. And she said, my mother, her pantry's full. She's got everything preserved. She's got months of food. And my sister, her pantry's full. I said, well, that's great. Why are you here? And she said, well, it's just so addicting. She said, I've been coming and the food's so wonderful. My children are healthy and we haven't had a grocery budget. See, I didn't just... There was enough where I didn't just get to supplement. I got to replace all my groceries. And we took that money and we shifted it to paying off debt. And I just paid off all my debt. And Tyler, I just started my son's college fund. See, when you can shift that cycle from dependence to independence, when we can create an environment that lifts people up instead of holds them down, when we can start equipping them with competence, right? When we're providing because they're providing for themselves. So all I do is bring the truck in. And then they get to do the work. They get to earn it all. So I could spend hours and hours talking to you about the intricacies of this system and who's hungry and statistics and all the help that is needed. But more than anything else, I want you to realize that it doesn't take a lot to make a big difference. So there are a few things. Number one, we can always use volunteer help. I need folks to coordinate online. I need folks that are willing to work with social media and fundraising, because we literally, I mean, like we just for the first year. So my background is in business. I knew nothing about fundraising. So if anybody has a background or knows somebody with a background that wants to work with a cause, and it doesn't have to be grant writing, it can just be grassroots fundraising. We can use help with that. If you just want to come out and spend some time on a farm and get dirty, we can use volunteers with that. If you know families in need, people in need, we've got thousands of pounds of food. So this gal that I was telling you about, I said, why are you here? She said, well, I've created this route. I said, well, can you share it with me? And she says, well, as my pantry was full, I just started looking for other folks in need. And on my way home, there's this this elderly community that's kind of low income. And so I just started stopping there and just giving them baskets of produce. And then I go down the way and there's this other homeless community and they're always there and I give them baskets of produce. She's got 6 stops on her way home and she doesn't even take anything anymore. But she continues to come and it's this pay it forward mentality. And what I realize is we've got over 10 people in the community and that's all they do. I've got this gal that she brings her truck and I asked her, I said, geez, you've got a big family because she's loading up this pickup truck. Now, I don't mind because we've got a lot, you know, there's no shortage, but she's loading up this pickup truck and I just need to make sure she's not taking it to a food stand and selling it because that happens, by the way. I could tell you a story, but we don't have enough time. But one of the stands near our house, I mean, I asked them verbatim, this comes down to where are you sourcing your food? I mean, I asked them, do you guys use any chemicals and on your land? And they said, absolutely not. And fantastic. And we talked a little bit more and I was satisfied with their answers. And so we shopped there for a while. But the problem was, a year and a half down the road, I found out the only thing they were growing in that stand was the strawberries. Everything else was imported from California, Mexico. So they were telling the truth when they said they didn't use chemicals on their land. No, I mean, I'm legitimately. And so this is the challenge. So a couple challenges to you. Number one, let's get involved. Number two, learn where your food's coming from. Source it directly so you know who's growing it and what they're doing to the soil. Because sustainability is the beginning. We realize sustainability just means you're treading water. So I want you to picture that for a minute. All sustainability means is we're no longer going backward. We're not going forward, right? We need to be generating, we need to be putting in, contributing to and supporting regenerative food systems where our soil is improving, where our water is improving, where we're making progress. So I just want to challenge you guys to come down, spend a little time with me afterward if you have any interest in getting involved, whether that's personally or whether you might know someone, or if you know of a community in need. This is something that we do all year. We sent 6 trucks to Standing Rock. We support lots of outside endeavors. If people are, we don't get involved politically, but if people are hungry, we feel that that's a basic human need and they deserve to be fed. So I want to appreciate you for having us here. Thank you very, very much for your time and energy. You guys have a wonderful rest of your day.
All right. We do have 10 minutes for questions and comments and things.
Thank you both. It's a very inspiring story in these hard times. Obviously, your neighbors must have come around, but I am curious. Oh, no?
Most.
I am curious because there are so many regulations about food, and you brought up the Costco thing. Have you not had to deal with that issue?
We have. So there's the Bill Emerson Act, which absolves all producers of liability. Now, most corporations won't acknowledge it because we live in such a litigious society. But it technically absolves all producers and distributors of liability if they are donating the food to families in need. And that was in 1994, and so we give a copy of that to everyone so that everybody's very clear and they're aware. Now that was in 1994, and I believe Safeway was litigated against in 99, and they don't want to go to court, so they settled out of court, but it was $1 million-plus suit. So just because the act is there doesn't mean nobody's going to litigate. But what it does mean is that there's a layer of insulation, and then we give people a, I don't know, a 3-page handout that basically says you're going to die if you eat this. And so they acknowledge that they're okay with death. So that helps a little.
Tyler and Liz, thank you so much. I had occasion to go out to the farm this last week, and it is absolutely fascinating. Please, please go out. And our hosts, Tyler and Liz, are so welcoming and so willing to take you around and tell you more about what they do.
Thank you. It's just outside of Sherwood, just off Highway 99, so close. And if you let me know in advance, I will put pants on. I was gardening in my underwear when they showed up. That's pretty normal, actually.
Other questions?
Thank you, Tyler and Liz. I'm actually, my mind is worrying now because of the possibilities, because I am the head of a corporate foundation that does grant making, but
wow.
Even more importantly, we try to think of events where our people can, you know, go out and volunteer. And we do that at the Oregon Food Bank twice a year. But I have to tell you, and nothing against the Oregon Food Bank. I mean, they do incredible things. But it was a real eye-opener the first time I went there, because I was in the Beaverton place with, you know, about 10 of our people. And we spent the whole time sorting food and had to throw away anything that was made by Nestle, because
Whoa.
Nestle will not allow any of their food to be donated. They demand that it be destroyed. And to go through all of this huge conveyor belt of food and, you know, look at the labels and see
right.
how much of our food
right.
comes from Nestle,
yeah.
it was heartbreaking, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm much happier sorting potatoes and frozen vegetables, but to have to throw away all of that food was...
Right.
You know, so it didn't make us feel good about the
right.
volunteer effort that we had there. So,
well, we would love to have you out. And we do large groups
awesome.
On a regular basis.
Yeah,
they help
wait.
A lot.
We'll talk. Thank
Great.
You.
I'm looking forward to it.
Other questions? Yeah.
The chickens and the pigs, do you slaughter them?
Yes.
And are you able to sell the meat, or is that... Do you?
Great question. So we're very upfront about that we are an active farm. And if you inquire, so we have an email address, volunteer@hearttoheartfarms.com. And everybody is scheduled. And everybody is given a long list of disclaimers. And one of the primary ones is that we harvest our own food on site. I taught over 500 people to butcher their own livestock last year. So it's because intercepting the immorality of the meat industry, standing in that gap, is one of the biggest, one of the most important things one of the biggest callings that I have, is making sure that people know how to do it themselves and can discontinue their dependence on the commercial meat industry because of the atrocities in animal care and the way that they're raised. So to answer your question, can we sell it legally? I could spend probably an hour on regulation. The short answer is yes. I have a very close relationship with our U.S. Department of Agriculture inspector. And very close now. It started a little rocky, but we're on the same page. And we both have the same goal. His goal is to keep people safe and healthy. And as long as we maintain focus on that goal, we have some different beliefs, for sure. And some different ideas of how things should be done, but we can satisfy his requirements and our requirements and make sure that families know what they're getting into and know what they're putting on their table. So that's the answer to that question is yes, there's a way.
Thanks, Tyler. I saw a video on social media, and it was like, you know, the top 10 things to donate to a food bank. And, like, the number one thing they said was money. And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, because, you know, with if you give money to a food bank, then they can buy fresh vegetables and fruits.
Right.
What would your comment be to that?
That our systems are still developing. You know, and I mean, our like, as a society, we're still figuring out how to do this. And for many food banks, that's probably true. My goal is to spend the next 5 years really traveling and starting to duplicate this. So we were going to franchise it, and then I realized that wasn't what I wanted to do at all. But I really, because I can only help, and we probably serve a total of 10,000-20,000 people, if you count the people that are reached through the other food banks that we support. And that's about it. But every city, can you imagine the power if every city had one farm that did this? See, we have the ability to pick up 500,000 pounds of food from one distributor. One. And there are 15, 20 within a 10, 15 mile radius. So if every town had one farm that did this, there would be nobody hungry. So it just takes a little bit of creativity. And so one of my big focuses now is to begin speaking and reaching out and training farmers to develop systems like this so that we can start spreading this across the country and really across the world. So my recommendation is for people to study and learn from people that have a system that you take stock in. And then when you do decide to give a check, because checks are important, money is important. But if you can my truck to fill it up, my 26-foot semi is about $70. So you can pay $70 to buy groceries, or you can spend $70 on fuel, and I can pick up 6 loads at 10,000 pounds apiece. So that's my cost. $70, 60,000 pounds. So it's a good thing. Now, I'm hoping someday to pay a driver, because my father-in-law is dedicated, but he's tired. He's tired. So any help with fundraising? We have no paid staff. It's all volunteers, because this is, you know, we just started this. So we're just doing what we can, just scraping by. I mean, it would be great to have a paid driver that was under 65. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, his joints getting in and out of that truck. I mean, he's great. He's dedicated. He keeps us going. But and we're growing. And so that's the beauty. I mean, if you think back 3 years, like I said, I was picking it up in a horse trailer with 55-gallon barrels. So the fact that we have a truck and the ability to unload large quantities is a blessing. So I hope that answered your question. I apologize. Yeah.
Let's round of applause.
Thank you very much.